Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Listen live each week, or if you are not available during the airing time, you can also listen to podcasts that are available there. Just go to wdiy.org, local programming, scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and peruse the selection available. Today is May 22nd, 2019. The markets were down today. The Dow closing at 25,776, the NASDAQ at 7,750, and the S&P at 2,856. Our topic tonight is cash flow management. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and if you talk live on air, we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. If you prefer to not be live on air, you can just give your question to Lori. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I'll do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So what are we talking about? Cash flow management. It's a subject that many people cringe at, but it's certainly one worth embracing if you want to feel empowered in your financial life. Cash flow management or cash flow is one of the elements of financial planning when we're doing financial planning for folks. Next week, I am going to talk about the elements of financial planning and how they all work together. The six pieces being cash flow, investment management, retirement plans, risk management, tax planning, and estate planning. And this is one element of that, cash flow management. It's an important concept to understand and grasp. And so we're going to just talk about cash flow management a bit in general tonight and what it means and some little tips on, embracing it and managing it. So cash flow management basically would cover inflows to our cash flow and outflows. So what's coming in and what's coming out and kind of understanding what they are and how we can manage them more effectively, sometimes more efficiently to help us. And why do we want to do that? Why do we want to know about our cash flow management or inflows, outflows? Why do we want to manage those? Well, because it's really a means to an end. So the means to the end is the motivator. And you have to envision what that end is that you want. What is it that you want? Why do we want to manage our cash flow? It's a basic, you have to have a basic understanding that in our daily lives, everything that we do, a lot of what we do in our daily lives has a cash flow impact. If we get up in the morning, we turn on the lights, take a shower, we get dressed, we jump in our car, Maybe we go to work, maybe we're running errands, maybe we're going to volunteer opportunities if we're retired. We eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and, you know, come back home and do whatever other activities, turn on the TV. There's financial impacts to everything we're doing. We're paying for our utilities. We're paying for the food we're eating. We're paying for the clothing that we're buying, the car that we just got into, the gas that we had to use to drive to our destinations. So it's just one of those facts of life that rather than let it control you, let's work on seeing how we can embrace this to maximize our cash management, which will help give us a little bit more freedom. On shows, you've heard me talk about the power of compounding. Well, the power of compounding is where you're not having to work so hard because you've accumulated assets, accumulated, you know, retirement accounts, savings accounts, cash, real estate, whatever it might be. You've accumulated assets that are giving you a return on your money, and over time, that money makes money. That power of compounding. We can't do that if we don't understand the concept of our cash flow management. And I'm trying to avoid the word budgeting because that really throws people over the edge and not wanting to talk about it. So let's not make it a problem for us. Let's make it an opportunity. So to that end, I also wanted to mention a book that I just picked up off my shelf at the office. I've not read the book, but I did just kind of glance through it really quickly before I ran over here tonight. And the book ended up in my hands because from time to time, publishers will send books to us to, you know, maybe talk about on the show. And this is a book that will sound probably very, very familiar to a lot of people. And a lot of people may or may not have read it, though, like myself. I've known about the book. In fact, I probably have a copy at home, but never took the time to read it. And it's Rich Dad, Poor Dad by Robert Kiyosaki. So Rich Dad, Poor Dad, I think he wrote the first book probably, it said 20 years ago, and this was from 2017. So 20 years ago, 1997, I guess that would be Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And what I thought was interesting is I just kind of glanced at one of the first lessons, and it was lesson number one, the rich don't work for money. And I thought that was kind of interesting, and there's a whole chapter on that, and there's many lessons throughout the book that he goes over, and he talks about the lesson and a little bit of a story around it, probably to help you remember better, and then goes through study sessions. So, for example, the first chapter was The Rich Don't Work for Money. Chapter two is Why Teach Financial Literacy. Chapter three, Mind Your Own Business. Chapter four, The History of Taxes and the Power of Corporations. Chapter five, The Rich Invent Money. Oh, I'm saying chapters. These are all lessons. Chapter six, Work to Learn, Don't Work for Money. And those are pretty much the lessons, that's six lessons, and then chapter seven just kind of talks about overcoming obstacles. But one of the first things I picked up in that first chapter called Rich Don't Work for Money, lesson number one, was a statement here. And I thought this was important. It says, and this is quoting him, Robert Kiyosaki from Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He said, the whole chapter is a story about how he got interested in, you know, managing money, making money, whatever. And the lessons from what he calls his rich dad, which was his friend's father, and poor dad, which was his own father, who was a teacher. So here's what he had said. And this was the rich dad saying this. So the author is talking about what he said. First, the fear of being without money motivates us to work hard. And then once we get that paycheck, greed or desire starts us thinking about all the wonderful things money can buy. The pattern is set. And they go on to say, what pattern? The pattern of get up, go to work, pay bills, get up, go to work, pay bills. People's lives are forever controlled by two emotions, fear and greed. Now, I thought that was interesting. And he ended up calling that the whole premise of the book and a game that he had developed that this gentleman had, Robert Kiyosaki had developed. He says, offer them more money and they continue the cycle by increasing their spending. This is what I call the rat race. So I just thought it might be important to talk about what our goal would be. What is the end, the means to the end of our, you know, what is our goal? What do we want? Use that as a motivator, use that as an opportunity, but understand that our emotions can get in the way. The emotions can keep us from moving forward. And I guess you're going to have to think about and recognize those when they're happening to you to be able to move forward. When we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about fear and greed and how that impacts what happens sometimes in our investment planning as well. But then kind of go over cash flow management and what that is and give you some tips if you've been immobilized from moving forward. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Tom Druckenmiller. Join me and our other folk music hosts each weekday evening from 7 to 9 and Sunday from 11 to 1 for a great mix of classic folk, bluegrass and old time, Celtic, blues, and contemporary songwriters, plus interviews, concert information, and more.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and you're listening to Your Financial Choices, and we're talking about cash flow management this evening and just kind of trying to set the stage for a way to motivate ourselves to pay attention to our cash flow management, but also trying to implement some little, you know, tips and tricks to make it a little bit easier. But bottom line, when you set a goal for something, it makes it much easier to make the right decisions and take the right steps if you have that goal. So if you set the goal, it's much easier to go toward it because then you can measure it. You sometimes hear about SMART goals. They have to be measurable, actionable, achievable, I should say. So cash flow, let me go back to just for a moment this quote I had read about greed and fear. We often hear about that in the markets as well, in the market cycle, that quite often what you'll see happen is people, if they decide to invest in the stock market and the stock market goes way up, there's euphoria, everything's wonderful. And then when the stock market starts to go down, there's fear, and people count on people acting on those fears. The seasoned investors rely on making money that way, because when someone is reacting out of fear, when the market goes down and they're selling, that's a buying opportunity for the people who have no fear, who are maybe more the risk takers or can afford to take those risks. So when the market is down and people are selling, that's a buy opportunity for a lot of people. And then what happens, the people who have, you know, acted on that fear and sold when the market's down, they're selling low. And then as the euphoria builds up and the market recovers and goes back up again, all of a sudden they're feeling comfortable again and they decide to go back into the market when it's high. And then they are buying high, and they're probably buying from those same people that bought that stock when it was low. So it's the market cycle, fear and greed. And Robert Kiyosaki talks about that in Rich Dad, Poor Dad, about the fear and greed that people have in, I have to make money, I have to pay my bills. So there's a fear, I'm not going to have money. So then they start working, they start making money, then they have money, and then greed sets in and they, you know, want to spend that money and acquire things and things like that. So we have to pay attention to our emotions in our financial life and how we are approaching our decisions. Are we disciplined in our decisions, whether it is investing or in our cash flow management? So cash flow management includes inflows, obviously, and outflows. So what do we want to do about managing those? Well, the reason we would want to manage our cash inflows and outflows is because we don't want to spend more than we have. Because if we spend more than we have, then we're, you know, accumulating some kind of debt. That's when people are getting into credit card trouble or home equity loans or, you know, mortgages bigger than they can afford. So we kind of want to know what our income flows are in order to control our outflows. But what is our goal first? Why do we want to save money? Well, we might want to save money to eventually buy that house, to eventually buy that car, to eventually retire. And that is, I think, the hardest goal for people to envision. It's easier for people to think about personal property, you know, their material things. It's easier to think, oh, I want to buy this. It's more tangible. I can buy that outfit. I can buy that car. I can rent that apartment. I can buy that house. These are tangible things that we get kind of an immediate enjoyment from. You may have heard about that test with the Oreo cookies. Do you have an Oreo cookie today or do you have two Oreo cookies tomorrow? And if the person could wait the 2 days, they you know, till the next day, they got double the Oreos. But a lot of people can't wait. They want that immediate gratification. It's all about a discipline and a focus. So having the goal and having a little bit of discipline in the emotions we have around our decisions and a little discipline in the decisions we make on a daily basis. Very similar to eating or going through the grocery store line, impulsiveness. It's an ability to control the impulses we have. So what is the goal? We can have short-term goals and we can have long-term goals. And we would budget for those. So maybe we have a short-term goal of, you know, getting a new phone, which would be very different than budgeting for that home. So you'd want to kind of know how much you're going to want to save and, you know, what steps you're going to take in order to kind of manage that. So we have to first understand what the inflows are. So the inflows could be fixed inflows, income that we know is coming in. Sometimes we have this later in life with things like Social Security or a pension or an annuity. Fixed income coming in. It's not variable, pretty much going to stay the same. That would be like fixed income. Variable income might be investment income. If we are relying on dividends or interest to help with our cash flows, that could be variable. Wages could be in some way fixed, but could also be variable, meaning we have a salary that could be fixed. Bonuses, commissions could be variable pay. So when we're looking at kind of the income resources or sources that we have to understand which ones we can rely on or count on. Sometimes what we'll have folks do is we might have a cash management plan that will include maybe their salary, but might not include their bonus. So we want to make sure they're going to be okay with the salary that we can budget for, anticipate, estimate. And the bonus or commission may be not as reliable. So let's make sure you're not spending outside of your means with your fixed salary and use the bonus for some of those other spending needs that you might have. It might be that vacation that you wanted to do in 2 years to Europe. So you would earmark the extra money maybe for something like that. or the extra money could accumulate, and it could be that extra payment on your mortgage that you wanted to do. If one of your goals was to pay off your mortgage not in 30 years, but maybe in 25 years or 20 years, and if you figure all those extra bonuses would automatically go to that, you know, that might be able to help you reach your goal. So you want to understand if the income inflows are fixed or variable. Are they secure or are they not secure? So a bonus commission might not be secure. Salary could be, but we also sometimes have to plan for what if we might lose our salary. And we can talk about some of those circumstances when we get back from our second break here. The phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable. And the question can be off topic as well. It doesn't have to be about cash flow management. It's not even a topic I like talking about that much either. But again, the number is 610-758-8810, and we'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org.
Lost my voice there for a second. Welcome back to the show. You are listening to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY, and I am your host, Lori Siebert, and we're talking about cash flow management. If you have questions tonight, the phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can talk live on air with me or off air. If you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can talk off air. What I would really be interested in hearing about is if there are any listeners who use a budget app on their phone to help manage their cash flow. If they have a budget app, if someone really loves one that they're using and want to call in and just let Lori know what they are, or, you know, talk on air as well, you can do that. I am interested in knowing about budget apps. We had someone on years ago from Mint.com, and I'm going to talk in a little bit about an article I read where that is still one of the more, highly rated apps for budgeting. So, inflows, fixed, variable, secure, not secure. You want to have a picture of what those inflows look like. And when I talked about salary and how we say, can we count on a salary? Is that something that's secure or fixed? Well, when we're doing planning, obviously, we have to make some assumptions that you're going to have your job and that you're going to keep your job. Where you have to be careful is especially when you're first starting out and you're in that nesting stage, when maybe you're recently married and maybe buying a home and, you know, planning a family. All of a sudden, what your idea of what your budgeting look like or your cash flow management would look like could change dramatically if you have life changes that we expect. But if you don't plan ahead and envision what the goal is, then you could really catch yourself in trouble. I've used this example before, when my husband and I we had already had one home when we first moved here to Pennsylvania. The company helped with the closing costs, et cetera. We couldn't miss out on that, and we had bought our first home. And then 10 years later, we had three children. We were in a row home in Allentown, and it was time to, move to a little bit of a bigger home and one with a yard. And the realtor approved us for, a much costlier home than than we thought we should buy, because at that time I was working part-time. And we thought, what happens if, you know, I decide not to work? I didn't want to, you know, count on that money that I was making. So we actually bought a home that we could afford on just one salary. And even then, it was quite tight because you don't realize all the extra costs that come with a new home. You have to buy a lawnmower. You have a bigger house. You have to buy more furniture. The children are growing. They have more clothes. And, you know, all different kinds of things started kind of hitting us left and right. And we were so grateful that we had not purchased more than what, you know, we thought we could afford, because even then it was a little tough. So when we talk about planning and understanding your inflows, you have to understand how reliable those inflows are, even over the long term or over the period of time that these goals that you might have. So if our goal, remember I said a goal could be, in, you know, to buy an iPhone, or a goal could be to buy that next car or get that next nicer apartment or that nicer house. In that period of time, if I'm saving for 10 years from now, what other life stages am I going to go through that period of time? Can I rely on these inflows, or is this a reliable measure of meeting my goals? Okay, so inflows, fixed, variable, secure, not secure. Outflows. When we talk about outflows, we're looking at discretionary spending or non-discretionary spending. So if your non-discretionary spending is as much as your inflows, you're going to be in trouble, because there's always going to be some discretionary spending that we're going to need, food, clothing. When I talk about non-discretionary spending, I'm talking about those fixed costs, like, you know, the apartment rent or your transportation. Those are non-discretionary because you have to have certain of those expenses. Food, you know, if you have a job, you need to get to your job. How are you going to get to your job? Maybe you can take a bus. Maybe you can walk. Maybe you can car share, ride share. But maybe you have to, you know, provide your own transportation. And depending on what that might be, that's going to be a non-discretionary expense. Now, what you can watch, and I guess I'm jumping the gun here a little bit. We want to talk about what how we manage some of our expenses to make our budgeting a little bit better. I have a caller on line one. We have Liz from Slatington. Liz, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi.
Is that okay?
Yes.
How I'm speaking?
Yes, okay. I can hear you fine. How can I help
okay,
you?
Okay, perfect. My name is Liz, and I have a question regarding an inheritance.
Okay.
Okay, my aunt, she was 102, God bless her soul, and she left a big inheritance for all of her nieces and nephews, and from that, I have $61,000, and I did not cash it yet or deposit it, because I like to know, we already paid an inheritance tax in New Jersey because she was from New Jersey.
Okay.
And I'm from Pennsylvania. So I didn't know if there was some type of retirement plan that I did not have to pay an inheritance tax.
Well, if the depending on what kind, I don't know about the you said retirement plan, like meaning if you could take it and put it into a retirement account?
Yes, that's what I would like to do, or some, because we already paid the I believe it was 11%.
Yeah.
Or 60 tax in New Jersey.
Yeah. It depends on the relationship. So the inheritance tax was already paid, you said, probably maybe it came out of the estate. And this check, is it from the estate?
Yes, it is.
So the estate wrote you a check, and that's just like cash in the bank then. So
okay.
That's a check that you can cash. It's good to be careful, and I'll tell you why to be careful in certain circumstances, but from what you've described, I believe if this was a check directly from the estate and the executor managed the estate, sold the assets, or, you know, gathered all the assets, sold the assets, reported all the assets, reported and paid the inheritance tax. This is what we call residue, and you might have been a residuary beneficiary and you got a percent of the estate, and it was this amount of money. You could put that in the bank. You don't have any, if it's just a check, it's no income tax on it, inheritance tax already paid, you can do whatever you want with that money. One thing that I tell people to do, if you are employed, and let's say you have a 401k at work, what you could do, sometimes people will only put in 3% or 6% because maybe they can't afford the cash flow. One thing you could do is increase your contribution to your 401k. Your check will become smaller because you're putting money in your retirement account. Your paycheck will become smaller, but then you could earmark some of this money for that, make up the difference in your cash flow.
I see. Okay.
So then, you're not going to save income tax by putting this money in the retirement account. You're going to save income tax by putting your paycheck in your retirement account, but you're going to use this to close the gap on the cash flow.
I like that. Yeah, I'll talk to my husband. Okay, thank
you okay.
so much.
I appreciate your help. Thank you for listening, Liz.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. When we come back from this next break, I'm just going to mention a couple other things for Liz, if she's still listening. Just a couple other ideas and things to think about when getting an inheritance, because I want to give a couple little cautions and a couple little opportunities. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
You have been listening to Your Financial Choices with Lori Seabird, WDIY 88.1 Allentown. The current temperature now is 75. Tonight, we're going to have a chance of showers and thunderstorms, low around 56. Thursday, we're going to have more storms and could produce gusty winds, mostly cloudy with a high near 77. Thursday night, low around 59. Friday, sunny with a high near 75. And on your Friday night, low around 55 again. Saturday, a slight chance of showers, then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., but mostly sunny with a high near 78. Saturday night, low around 62. And Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 85. Now back to Your Financial Choices with Lori Seabird.
Thank you, Shondi. I just want to mention a couple other things from our last caller, Liz. When she received an inheritance, and it was a cash inheritance, and that just gives folks a little flexibility in some of their other financial planning that they can do. And my example to her was, if you now have this cash and in the past maybe you weren't fully funding a retirement account, a way to kind of get a tax benefit if it makes sense for you, and everyone's circumstances are different. This is just an educational show, not specific to anyone's particular situation. But if we have maybe someone who is not fully funding their retirement account because they don't have the cash flow, this would be an opportunity to maybe increase those contributions to the retirement account, which decreases the income tax. So if you put $1,000 in your retirement account and you're in a 22% bracket, it's not really costing you the full $1,000 today because you get the tax savings. So if you do a little bit more, but now your paycheck is smaller, you can use the inheritance to kind of help fund the cash flow. My caution always is when someone comes into an inheritance, it's, as I mentioned at the top of the show, it's human nature for most people. You have money, you spend money. It's economics. It's the one thing I remember from my microeconomics class in college so many decades ago. The one thing the professor said, it's economics. People spend what they make. The whole topic and point of this show tonight, cash flow management, is to resist those urges, those instincts to spend. Where this gentleman who wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the lesson from Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad was fear and greed. We're afraid to do things because of money. And then greed pushes us to you know, spend and use the money. I'm not saying you're going to do that, Liz. I'm just saying that you're so smart to wait and to be thoughtful about what you're doing. In addition, just a couple other ideas is I love Roth IRAs. Not sure if your income, and you don't need to call me back and tell me your income, but if your income would allow, you could always do some of those contributions to your 401k at work. And if your income is below a certain threshold, you may be able to also contribute to a Roth IRA. You and your husband both may be able to do it. The Roth IRA contribution, it's about 100. If your combined page one income is about $189,000, $190,000. You may be able to put money into a Roth IRA. And the beauty of the Roth IRA is if you put money in the Roth and you have it invested, it grows income tax free. And if you wait to take it out until it's a qualified distribution, it would be income tax free on the earnings and growth. If you ever needed to tap that original contribution, you can without any problem. It's just the earnings that you have to keep in there the longer of 5 years or age 59 and a half. But Roth IRAs are great too. Also, if you have children and you've thought about an education account for them, Pennsylvania does give us a deduction for contributions to education accounts up to the gift amount of $15,000 each. And that's a 3.07% income tax savings right there, 3.07%. So that's pretty good. And we have Richard from we lost Richard. Richard, can you call back if you want? It's if you want to give us a call back, 610-758-8810. He was calling about a College 529. Do we have Richard back? Okay. Hi, Richard. Can you hear me?
Good evening, Lori.
Hi. Thanks for calling. How can we help you?
Okay. I just want to run. I had some queries on this 529 educational savings account for people.
Yep.
The number one thing would be is, What are the applications for those monies once the individual, you know, gets to be at an age where they could apply the funds?
Okay. Oh, I thought you had more question than that. Do you want to give me all the questions? And
oh yeah. Another one is there a shelf life to these plants? If the person is you know, in their 30s and they still have, when they set these accounts up, is it automatically a timed event?
Okay.
Where you know it has to be kind of use it or not lose it, but use it or you know,
right?
Kind of apply it elsewhere. And the last one would be, I think on some of these, there would be the original investment, maybe the contributions that are made over a period of time. But what is a tax exposure if a person does not use it in a qualified manner and wants to use it for something else, maybe travel or purchase of a house?
Okay, great. And the College 529, right before you called, I was just mentioning to someone who had come into some cash that if they had college-age children, they could fund a 529, which is the Internal Revenue Code section that governs these types of saving vehicles for qualified education expenses. So that's where the 529 word comes from. And it can be used for qualified education expenses, which can include tuition and fees, books, supplies, equipment, computers, internet service. And the difference, there's a lot of different education benefits that we have through our tax system. But the 529 also allows the funds to be used for room and board if at least a half-time student. And the nice thing about that is that room and board is not just at the university, but it could be if your child is also renting an apartment. It just can't exceed the amount that the school would charge. So there are quite a bit of what I would call qualified education expenses that the 529 can cover. I will also add that I caution people that if they also would qualify for some other education benefit, in particular the American Opportunity Credit, which is like free tech, free money. It's a tax credit. And if you have out-of-pocket expenses, meaning I've put, you know, cash toward tuition of at least $4,000 and I'm within certain income limitations, I could get a $2,500 credit. So I can't do both. I can't use all my 529 for all my education expenses and still get the American Opportunity credit. So you kind of want to play them against each other and use it properly. So lots of uses for the 529. For the American Opportunity credit, it's literally like tuition and fees. The other thing about a 529 under tax reform was the they changed it that you can use up to $10,000 for primary or elementary or secondary education. So if you have kids in a private school and their tuition is, you know, $5,000, $10,000, you can use up to the amount of tuition, not to exceed $10,000, for the 529. So when you say, how long can these last? You know what? I used to know that rule. I think it was like 21 years after the last beneficiary. I don't remember exactly what it is, but I do know that the owner of the 529 can change the beneficiary to a related. It has to be a particular relative, but you could name your child as the beneficiary, and then if your child doesn't use it, they could become the successor owner and name their child. So I do know that as much as that. It could also come in handy then if you've named your child a beneficiary and they don't use all that money, but maybe you have a younger child, so one that's in college, and they don't use it all, and a younger child still maybe in high school at a private school, you could change the beneficiary to them and use it for their tuition up to $10,000. So they're quite flexible, these 529s. Now, Richard, you also asked, what if I decide not to use it for these qualified education expenses? Well, the whole incentive of having them income tax free was to encourage people to save for the cost, the high cost of education. So if you don't use it for education, they're going to penalize you a little bit. Number one, the distributions won't be income tax free. They're going to be taxable, but they're only going to be taxable on the earnings that you achieved on that investment. So if you invested $10,000 in a 529 and you earned $1,000, now it's worth $11,000, and you take $11,000 out, that $1,000 is going to be taxable. Well, you're really in no different situation than you would have been had you not put it in the 529, right? So if you had $10,000 and you had invested it and made $1,000, you would have paid tax on that. So you're really no different there. Where they penalize you is now they're going to also charge 10% penalty on that $1,000 of earnings. It's not the full distribution. It's only the earnings that they will tax and charge the 10% penalty. There are exceptions to the 10% penalty. And generally, that's what I would try to look for if there was an exception. It could be a scholarship. So if your child received a $10,000 scholarship, you could take $10,000 out and avoid the tax. You don't avoid the tax. You avoid the 10% penalty. You would have tax on the earnings in that situation. You just wouldn't have the penalty. And then there's some other ones, death, disability, military, I believe. So there are some exceptions to that. But generally, you could name an additional beneficiary or transfer it to a beneficiary who could really use the money. So do you think I covered your questions, Richard?
Yes, you did, Lori. And actually, I have to kind of look at just maybe look a little deeper into the tea leaves. But just as far as the person's tax liability if they decide to not take advantage of the funds in the manner that they were intended for.
Right.
And I had heard of a bit of a higher number, which I thought was rather discouraging, where they had like the original nest egg. Once that was exempted, everything else that had accrued over a 20-year period, which was, say, just out of hand, was $50,000, mm-hmm. that the tax bite would have been $25,000 on that. But that seems a little high, according to us. I know you don't want, you're not getting straight tax a critique on all of this, the specifics here.
Uh-huh.
But it doesn't sound as if the tax bite is quite that high.
Well, what happens, Richard? Sometimes what happens is when you get people, whether it's advisors or people on television talking about these things, what I've noticed is, sometimes people like to scare people. And so they might use the highest tax rate. So if they said, the highest tax rate, I don't even know what it is anymore, 37% and a 10% penalty. And then they could say, well, that's 47 plus the local or the Pennsylvania tax of 3, they could say it could be up to 50.
Okay.
But that's not everybody's tax situation. Hardly, most of the country is not paying 37% in taxes. So what I would suggest if someone was, decided they didn't want to use it for education or weren't going to use it for education and maybe needed the funds, sometimes a grandparent will set up a 529, they retain the ownership and end up needing the money and they're desperate and they have to take the 529 back, they might be in that kind of situation. You could kind of manage the distributions from the 529 to mitigate the tax, hit happening all in one year. You could do it over time if you were in that situation. But generally, I do see people using them for education and continuing to use them for education and passing it on. And anyone could use it. A grandparent could set up a 529 for themselves and use it for education if they wanted. Anybody could set one up. So I hope that helps and just manage it well. So, Richard, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good day. Folks, we're at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. I love the questions, by the way, and appreciate them. 610-758-8810. Thank you.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Not only is becoming a WDIY member a great way to support the programs you love, it has its benefits. WDIY members have access to our weekly member ticket giveaway emails. Discover great concerts, theater performances, film screenings, and more, all while supporting the many choices and real voices on WDIY. Make your gift today at 610-694-8100 extension 7 or wdiy.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about cash flow management tonight. And one thing for sure that we've learned just from the last two callers and their questions was these financial decisions we make every day impact our cash flow. So to Liz's point, who had inherited some money, her decision about what is she going to do with that money impacts her could impact her retirement planning, her income taxes, her estate planning because she could have bigger assets now. So there's all kinds of things. I just love how, one decision in your financial life impacts the other. Why it's so important that when we're talking about our cash flow, the decisions we make on a daily basis are going to impact us over the long term. It's about resisting our emotions, the fear, the greed, resisting those, having a disciplined approach to our cash flow management, understanding that when we have excess cash flow, we now have the ability to build up assets. When we build up assets, we have the ability to benefit from investing or having compounding where our assets are making money for us. We're not having to work as hard if our assets are working for us and we're building up nest eggs and things like that. When we talk about cash flow again, if I have the money to put into a retirement account and I have an employer who matches, that again is building up our cash flow, our future, our assets that are going to earn more money. But it's about managing your cash flow to be able to have the ability to take advantage of all these opportunities that are out there. So we talked about what is your goal. First, understand your goal. That's going to help you drive you to take the action and steps that you need to do to meet that goal. Understand your inflows, whether they're fixed, variable, secure, not secure, your outflows, what's discretionary and what's non-discretionary. Once you have an idea of your inflows and your outflows, you need some type of a system to accumulate that excess cash flow, to work toward accumulating your assets or reducing your debt, because that could have been one of your goals, to reduce your mortgage, which if you reduce your mortgage, you reduce your interest that you're paying over time. You probably reduce maybe your primary mortgage insurance if you're paying that, if you didn't have a 20% down payment. That's all extra money you're paying that maybe you don't need to if you can get your mortgage down. So you kind of have to understand what's coming in, what's going out, and the aspects or nuances of all those different little pieces. So a quick way to kind of manage your money without getting into like scary budgeting is if you have an understanding of what your outflows are after your, you know, you know what your net paycheck is and you know what your outflows are, you can manage it in kind of a simple way. So if you say that you, your expenses are $2,000 a month on average, so that includes your monthly payments, your quarterly payments, your semi-annual payments, real estate taxes, things like that. On average, they're $2,000 a month, and you make $2,500 a month. If you have your $2,500 go automatically into a savings account, money market account, $2,500 a month goes into the income account. Once a month, you transfer $2,000 to your checking account. The checking account is where you're writing your bills or paying your credit card. If you're putting all your expenses on a credit card, some people do that. Automatic bill pay, that kind of thing, out of the checking account. So if it's $2,000 a month, you have $2,500 going in savings, you transfer $2,000 a month. If it's always zero, your checking account kind of averages out to zero each month, you're on budget. You're spending what you had planned, $2,000 a month. If you have to keep tapping your savings account, it means you're spending more than $2,000. So now you're kind of off the rails. You're not being disciplined. You're not on that budget, or you miscalculated your expenses. And maybe that's a wake-up call to go revisit that. If the money in the savings account, or excuse me, the checking account starts to accumulate, so you put in $2,000, spend $1,800. You still have $200 at the end of the month. The next month, you put in $2,000, you spend $1,800. Now you have $400 after month two. That could be that it's to cover those quarterly expenses or those semi-annual expenses. So you want to understand how that funnel method is working and what your expenses are. So that's a good way to monitor your expenses in a very easy way. There are some other resources out there, which I'll talk about in a minute if I have time, but I have Carolyn from Sailorsburg on line one. Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
I'm really good, Lori. How are you?
Good. Nice to hear your voice. How can I help you?
You too. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about goals, and there's, you know, the short-term goals and the long-term goals and trying to balance it all out. And I have, you know, my long-term goals set, and I'm working toward them, and then I have this opportunity to do something that I really want to do, but it's not at all necessary, and it requires a lot of money, and I'm just so torn on it. So it's one of those, you know, where your emotions come in with your financial choices.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess what you'd... One thing I try to think about is sometimes, you know, the emotion part... My husband gave me some great, great tips as we were going through our married life and continues to give me great tips. He would say, for example, if there was an outfit I saw that I'd like, he'd say, well, if you think about it tomorrow, forget about it today. And if you remember tomorrow, then it was really something you needed and you can come back and get it. And I am telling you 10 times out of 10, I never went back and got it. Same thing would happen in the, you know, in the grocery store aisle, those impulse items. It's like, well, you know, if you really need it, you'll think about it tomorrow. Also, coming up with the word, I think it was from this Rich Dad, Poor Dad book that someone had told me years ago without my reading the book. They said doodads, you know, do you need doodads? That's kind of like you know, tchotchke things or whatever. And that really helped. But sometimes we have experiences. So if there is an experience, to me, that's a lot different than a short-term goal of, you know, buying that car or that outfit or that vacation or something. The vacation would be an experience. Mm-hmm. So that's something I would think about. Like if this opportunity, you said it sounds like really great, and do you really need it? Maybe you don't. But is it going to be an experience for you? And is it something that you would not have another opportunity to do or to experience or to have? That's kind of how I might think about it. And then when you look at it in terms of your long-term goals, does that mean if I did this today, is it such a costly short-term goal that it might mean I work an extra month or I take an extra shift or I forego going out to dinner the two times a month or the four times a month I schedule? So that's kind of, is there something I can give up for this goal?
Wow, that is great. That really puts it in perspective.
Yeah. Whenever we think about, you know, spending money, what I have really embraced over the years, and Greg Karp, who used to write for the Morning Call and then went on to the Tribune in Chicago and now writes for NerdWallet, which is a website I want to give out to people.
NerdWallet.
Yeah, it's called NerdWallet. He had said this in one of his books, and I apologize, I can't remember the name of his book right now off the top of my head, but he had said experiences are something worth more than, you know, material things. And I think that was huge. And,
wow.
And that's how
I think you just really helped me, because I got to tell you that I've been a Rolling Stones fan for years and years, and I've never seen them live.
Oh.
And I have an opportunity to go see them on this tour. So.
Girl, you have got to go. I love Elton John beyond belief. I had never seen him, and he was coming live to Allentown several years ago. I think he came again recently. But I said if I could ever have the opportunity to see him, I would go. And I have not regretted it for a second. And I bought really good tickets.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's an experience. Now, they do, you know, they do sound a little bit rougher, but at least we can say we saw them.
Yeah.
So. I will champion that for sure.
Okay. Yeah, that would be some experience, no doubt in my mind.
It would.
Yeah. It's probably going to be a once in a lifetime.
That's so. Right. That's right.
Yeah, so. And it's like we can afford it, but should we, you know, cuz it's not a necessary thing.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's really a balancing act.
Yeah, forego a couple dinners out, you know. picnic instead or something. Well, thanks for calling, Carolyn. I hope that helped, and good luck with that, and enjoy.
I think it sure did. I'll let you know.
Okay, thanks.
Right,
have a
thanks.
Good one. Take care.
Good.
Folks, I do want to mention this website, NerdWallet. I know Greg just did a great job on that book he had written. I should have grabbed it for the show tonight, but and he didn't write this particular article, but this website is called nerdwallet.com. They have lots of information there. And to help people navigate some of this cash flow management that we're talking about, more than I could even begin to cover in a show. So from a very easy level, I talked about what I just talked about was the funnel method. That's without an app. That's without an Excel spreadsheet. That's without having to use Quicken or QuickBooks or anything. The funnel method, you come up with a monthly amount you think you're spending. Put all your paychecks and inflows into a savings account, transfer only what you think you're spending. If that checking account gets, you have to keep tapping into your savings, you're not following, you know, what you thought you were spending. That's an easy way. This NerdWallet has a budget app on their website too. It's free. I didn't go through it, and they didn't review it. In one of the articles I grabbed, it was about what apps to use for saving, for example, the mint.com, and they also mention one called Acorns. But Acorns is to help you save. It rounds up your spending and just puts money into a savings account. That's not really, to me, a budget app. That's a savings app. Mint.com, they say is the gold standard, but I did read some reviews about it, and some people had some frustrations with Mint, saying it wasn't updating like they thought it should and different things. So you want to explore what will work for you and understand what you're using the budget app for. Is it to save? Is it to have categories? There was one they mentioned that I have a client who uses. It's called YNAB. It's called You Need a Budget. Get it? You Need a Budget. YNAB. She really likes it, but there's a cost to it. And it's like $84 a year or $7 a month. And there's, I think, some free months for students. And that is what they call for real hands-on users, people who are probably really going to be committed. I will tell you an observation I've made over the years with working with people who know how much money they're spending, are the people with money. The people who know how much they're spending are the people with money. So if you want to be one of those people with money, I suggest you start thinking about or knowing about how much you're spending. NerdWallet has a bunch of articles. They have articles on credit cards, depending on what kind of credit card user you're going to be. Do you want 0% interest? Do you want points? Do you want free gifts? So all different kinds of information on money, on credit cards, loans, mortgages, investing, just lots of cash flow, lots of information. There is something on that website called Budgeting 101, How to Create a Budget. They talk about following five simple steps, figuring out your after-tax income, choose a budgeting plan, which could be that funnel method I mentioned, tracking your progress, that is toward that goal setting I had mentioned, tracking your progress, automate your savings. Automating your savings was one way we do through employer deduction for our retirement plans, and revisit your budget as needed. So folks, so much to talk about. NerdWallet.com, great website, I think, to check out for people who are interested in knowing how much money they're spending and getting some best deals. Next week, we're going to talk about the elements of financial planning, and I can touch on a few other items on cash flow management then. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller within the tradition folk music. I want to thank Lori C. for taking the calls. I want to thank Shandi for being here and all of our listeners for calling in with your great, great questions. Love them. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Have a great week.